PG-13? Maybe we could answer it.
All right, so you're going to need to get closer.
He might need a headset because I can hear us in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look, it's Drew.
Oh, Drew's here? He's supposed to be working. Hi, Drew.
Are you going to need to be closer to the mic?
I saw Drew last night. I won't tell you where I saw him, though.
All right. So,
we're rolling.
We're rolling. Got Facebook going. We're doing a lot for two.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Managing a lot.
There's a lot going on. Drew Samanson wants to comment. He's always got something to say.
It's like, no, you can't just do a podcast. We need to get 2-3 phones filming, and
yeah. We
can't just do one thing simply.
No.
All right, so here we are. My name is Christian with the Most High Show, sitting here with my man Mitchell Wilson. And today we're going to attempt to talk about hope versus hopelessness, just kind of these two things. I think they're both very relevant in the world of recovery. Man, it's very relevant, just humanity, just being human. So this is Mitchell's topic. And so I'm going to let him jump off with this. And if you have questions, comments, if you're watching Facebook Live, you can put something there. You can also call or message us if you're listening to this after the fact. All right.
That's right. So my name is Mitchell, and sometimes I identify as a junkie, but I'm not your typical junkie because I'm not high today.
High on life.
I used to think that I might be the most high. And not in a religious sense, but I mean, I was really loaded. And I was reminded this week, and I get reminded pretty regularly, that the people who get the most high, they don't wake up. And yeah. So, we lost somebody this week. And that hurts. But I don't think that's really what the Most High Show is about, and it's not my creation, so I can only speculate. But from what I gather, the Most High, when I think about it, is about, the high road, the light, a spiritual path, and there's a lot of different ways to do that. And so Christian and I were talking about different topics that we want to discuss that are related to not only recovery, but spirituality, because they're closely related.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I really think is very important for me to remember is that feeling of hopelessness. And so I can close my eyes and remember that pain that won't go away, and the feeling of having no more options. And so that period for me lasted from about March, April 2011 until about November 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And that period was a period that I refer to as my bottom. And I was talking to some people the other day, and they were talking about how, there might not be one ultimate bottom, because within bottoms there might be a trap door. And so when you think it's as bad as it could get worse. And so I'm grateful that I didn't have to take it any further. So I consider November 9th, 2011, my sobriety date. That's when I gave up the fight and decided to try to be sober. And it wasn't because I wanted to do the right thing. It was because I was in so much pain. I was hopeless. And I was offered a little bit of hope. And that hope was in the form of treatment. So I went to an institution called Ridgeview, which is a fine institution. And they basically took away my shoelaces and most of my personal property. And I was put in a lockdown facility so that I could get 24/7 treatment and they could monitor me to make sure that I didn't continue to hurt myself. And this hope came from a hopeless state where I was financially bankrupt. I'd taken every credit card, every financial resource, and taken it to the point where I was overdrawn on all my cards, maxed out. You know, I couldn't buy a Chick-fil-A sandwich. I remember what that was like. And I was spiritually bankrupt, and I didn't even know that there was a spiritual component to my life, but I just felt dead. There was nothing that brought me joy. You know, when I listened to music, it was just to calm down the noise in my head that was just constant thoughts or rumination about the horror that my life had become. And I remember having to climb in my car that I was hiding from the repo in my backyard behind a locked gate and just getting so high that I could feel like I might be able to breathe. I remember that. And that was part of my bottom. So, you know, now I have a lot of hope. And I'm not going to say that sometimes life doesn't get so painful that I feel a little hopeless, but I've got these tools that I've learned. And one of those tools is to reach out to other people and see how I can be of service. And I was even telling Christian that when we do these podcasts, they're therapeutic for me. I don't feel any pain. And life's painful. I think we as recovering alcoholics and addicts or people who are in the throes of their addiction, you know, we experience some of the most hardcore pain. And I'm sure other people can relate that don't necessarily suffer with this, but we certainly know what it's like to feel so much pain that the only solution seems like suicide or continuing to kill ourselves more slowly with substance or other self-destructive behaviors. So that's what I think about when I think of hope versus hopelessness.
Yeah. Well, you said something that you were given hope. Someone gave you hope in the form of treatment. What did that look like when someone was like, hey, you know, what's that look like when someone gives you hope?
Well, it's hard to really recall the actual facts and timeline because I was in such a horrible place that I only remember bits and pieces. But I do remember there was a near overdose in a bathroom in New York City. And I remember having a moment where I realized that if I fall out, the doors are locked, no one's here, mm-hmm. no one's going to save me. And that was a terrifying moment because I don't think I wanted to die. I just didn't want to feel the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometime shortly after that, when I kind of sobered up a little bit, I remember calling my mother and telling her, I don't know what to do. And it was clear that my life was in shambles and I was destroying every relationship around me and no one really knew what to do with me. And she had the most simple, elegant answer. She said, you should go to rehab. And so I get on the computer and I look for a rehab where I can smoke weed. And apparently I haven't, or at least I haven't seen them. Apparently there's no rehabs where you can smoke weed.
Wow.
Because apparently
imagine that
people actually need rehab from things like smoking weed. Like apparently it's not very easy to stay sober when you're high.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get that.
You didn't find that.
I just thought it was the pills and the powders, man. I thought I could keep drinking and keep smoking and I'd be all right.
Yeah, that's common. A lot of people feel like they can get out of rehab and just smoke weed.
I've seen it time and time again, and some of those people aren't with us anymore.
Yeah. Well, because in the what the reality of those things is, it's you're escaping, you're changing, you're altering your state of mind, you're escaping whatever your situation, you're changing the way you feel, and in that act, it's that act itself. So sometimes the substance doesn't necessarily matter, right? I mean, really, it's the fact that you're trying to control your feelings, you're trying to control your, you know, how you think, and so you want to get out of this situation, so you get high.
Right?
Whatever that high is. Yeah.
And so, as I'm sitting here drinking tea, I'm pleasantly reminded that we get thrown a bone every once in a while, and for some reason, caffeine seems to be...
Nice, yes.
You know, one of God's gifts, if you want to refer to it that way. I'm allowed to drink as much caffeine as I can consume. And even that can be taken to an extreme. I had a conversation with one of my mentors, and I was like, is there too much, such thing as too much caffeine?
Oh,
he's like, you might not want to drink like more than 10. Like, try to keep it under 10.
Yeah.
But I actually had to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I try to keep it under 10.
Yeah. So we're talking about hope and hopelessness. And I'm reminded of this joke Cedric the Entertainer said in The Kings of Comedy. And he says, the difference between black people and white people is white people hope and black people wish. And he says,
I've heard that.
He says, when, you know, a white guy gets up in the middle of the show, goes to the bathroom, he hopes no one's in his seat. And black people come back and they wish someone was in their seat.
Yeah.
It's pretty hilarious. That's the difference between white people and black people.
I can relate to that.
So, you know, when we think about hope, hope and faith are very closely related. And in the book of Hebrews, there's a pretty decent definition. And you had something good, too. Faith is confidence in what we hope for. So the hope is kind of the object of faith, right? So in that statement.
You could also say that faith is hope with a track record.
Yeah, I like that, too. Faith is hope with a track record. No, hope is faith with a track record.
No, faith is hope with a track record. Because at first I had a little bit of hope, but I didn't have any faith.
Okay.
And after a while of hope coming to fruition, and I have a track record with that hope working out,
mm-hmm.
then I get faith.
Yeah.
At least that's the way it worked for me.
Now, I wrote something. I was thinking about hope, right? And I was thinking of a very successful businessman. He doesn't hope. I mean, he takes action. He takes calculated risks. He assesses, you know, whether there's going to be a loss and what he has to gain from it. So hope really has no place for a person. Some people are like, what's hope got to do with it? I'm going to make this happen. And so as I started thinking about hope, I thought, man, like, somebody can really look at hope like as a weakness. Like, why are you hoping this will happen? Why are you hoping for something? Why don't you make it happen?
Yeah, I can relate to that. I used to think that if it was to be, it was to be me, right?
Right.
So there was nothing else responsible except for me.
Right.
And I did that for almost 27, 28 years, and it got me in a lockdown institution.
Right.
With no shoelaces. Uh-huh. So the way I approach life, that didn't really work. And I think there are probably some people out there who are well balanced, who, you know, they don't necessarily need that hope. And I don't know. I'm speculating. But I do know for me, I needed some hope that I could put forth my best foot. And if it was to be, so be it. And if it wasn't, then I was getting one of three answers. No, not right now. Or I've got something even better.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically I've got to turn it over. I've got to do the best I can and let go of the results. And that's very difficult. I can't say I'm very good at that.
Yeah.
But I'm getting better, I think.
Do you feel like that's kind of when you're talking about hope, that's kind of what you're saying too? I mean, it's part of what, like, you're going to push your best foot forward. You're going to try your best. You're going to make a good effort. But the outcome is left to hope. You hope for the best.
Yeah, because I've had faith in unanswered prayers, because there have been some things that I've wished for and hoped for that didn't come to fruition, and I'm so glad they didn't, you know?
Yeah, there's some girls I've prayed to.
I didn't want to say it.
I'm so glad that didn't
happen. Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but yeah,
you
so.
Catch up with them on Facebook, like, ding.
Yeah.
Glad that didn't work out.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, that might be too truthful, too honest.
Well, we're practicing honesty.
John's over here shaking his head like, man, that's
John just did a little sign of the cross here.
Yeah. So the other thought I had is that hope is for the wise. Hope is for those of us who are wise enough to know that very little is actually in our control. And really, if if you are a person who likes to control things, which I am that kind of person, I battle with that a lot. But all the things that we can control are kind of like, I don't know, they're not big enough. They're kind of small, right? I mean, the things that require hope are things that are out of our control. I mean, we hope for the future of our children. We hope for the future of the country we live in. We hope for the future of our friends, these things that are out of our control. So hope is really kind of rooted in something greater, right?
Well,
I mean, I'm not going to hope that I can drink this tea because I can control this.
Yeah, you know you can do that.
I know I got the tea. I could get the tea to my mouth. I'm not hoping, right?
I mean, I kind of spaced out for a minute there and went back to this point in time where I was part of an extortion that I was hoping to get 20 grand out of.
Yeah.
And I was getting really loaded and destroying myself. And if I would have gotten that 20 grand, man, I don't think I'd be here right now.
Right.
So thank God for that unanswered prayer.
Right.
And I'd probably be in prison if I would have survived it.
Yeah. Well, I used to, me and I think a mutual friend, Danny, were talking about hope and how I used to hope that the dope man had dope. Yeah. I used to hope that he'd pick up when I call. I want to talk a little bit about hopelessness. But before we get to that, I want to talk about, you know, how faith and hope and what are kind of the differences. And, you know, this is a conversation we're having, and we're by no means like experts at this, right?
No.
But I feel like you're saying hope seems like faith with a track record, faith, the difference between faith and hope. I mean, that's really hard for me to kind of put my mind around, you know, because I believe, like, faith seems like something that you believe, and hope seems like there's this great desire that we have, you know?
Well, I'm taken back to when I was in treatment, and I've got this visual of sharing a bedroom with another grown man, you know, almost like camp style, mm-hmm. because we're not really in a position where people trust us to be alone. And I remember picking up some spiritual literature and reading that if I did these certain things, I would be relieved of this obsession to get loaded. And I really hoped that that was true. And because I didn't have any other options,
mm-hmm.
I tried and it worked. And so that little bit of hope started getting a track record. And so they said, okay, well, do these other things, you know, call some other people a few times a day and see how they're doing and tell people how you're feeling, and that will help. And it did. So hope over time with those different, you know, trials
mm-hmm.
led to faith. And right now I have faith that even though this is one of the most difficult months I've had, I have not only hope but faith that it'll get better,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm not interested in doing anything self-destructive.
Right, because you know it's going to pass.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about hopelessness. To me, this is something that's very familiar. Hopelessness. It's something I definitely, you know, can struggle with. I'm a person who strives, right? I push, I try, I want to build and grow and do. And so sometimes when you do those things, when you're a person that does that, you oftentimes you don't make your mark. You don't get to where you set out to get. And most people who are entrepreneurial will understand that, right? That, you know, you try and sometimes you don't make it. You know, a business doesn't work the way you thought it would work, or a band doesn't get the record deal you thought it would get, or whatever it is. And so it's really easy to kind of get trapped, you know, at least for me personally, into this place of hopelessness, to kind of say like, well, it's almost like a blase blah, kind of nothing really matters, right? And that's a dangerous place to get, because when we become hopeless, it kind of starts this cycle. It creates this kind of mindset of depravity, this mindset of like, well, nothing's really going to work. And then it's really easy to go down this road of, well, if that's not going to work, then I might as well do what feels good, right? So hope is really a key for us to stay on the path, right? Whatever that path is. But it's really easy to kind of lose that. So sometimes when it comes to hopelessness, and you said this in your story, is we need someone to lend us hope. And sometimes we need to lend hope to others. Now, I feel like I'm about to make a point, but I don't really mean to. But when we're continually in conversation with people and we're trying to make points, we're trying to like convince people of our side of things, and you see this a lot on social media. I mean, social media is like I have to really regulate my time as I'm on social media broadcasting, but I have to regulate my time on social media because it's so divisive. It's so like this side and that side, and people believe in this, and you know, all these different issues that people take, and it's really easy to get caught up in that, and then you go, well, where's the hope, right? So I want to encourage anyone who's listening is like to be aware of that, to be aware of the what you're contributing, because there are people who are on the side of this feeling hopeless. They're looking at whatever the situation is and they feel hopeless. They're looking at their personal situation. Maybe it's financial. Maybe they're in the middle of addiction and they can't get out. Maybe they're in the middle of an abusive relationship. Maybe they're suicidal. And the idea of hope is so far from them, much like how it was for you.
Yeah.
And when you called your mom, she gave you this sense of hope. She said, well, here's a possible answer, right?
Yeah, she had a solution.
Be careful when you slam that thing down because it echoes in the mics.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. So when it comes to lending hope, it's sometimes I find it's easier for me to give someone else some hope than actually find it myself. Yeah. But when I do that, when I see someone who's struggling and I go, hey, man, I know it looks really bad right now, but here's some hope that if you can get through today, you know, if you can wake up tomorrow, then there's hope. And when I give, when I lend someone hope that I think I don't have, it kind of is this amazing reciprocal kind of thing where I begin to feel a little hope for myself. I mean, have you ever been giving someone advice and you're like, wait a minute, who am I talking to right here, right? It sounds like you're talking to yourself, right? You know? Yeah. And so I want to like encourage people who are listening to even if you don't feel hope, there's somebody out there that needs a little bit. And how can you be conscious of what you're saying, what you're doing, especially on social media or in your family or in your circumstances, to say, all right, people need hope. I mean, as soon as if enough people lose hope, I mean, this is not going to be a place where everyone's going to want to be anymore, right? Mm-mm. I mean, to hope is to be human, but to lose that hope, that's you know, that's a dark place.
Well, we're so ready to engage in conflict, it seems. And I don't know if that's our nature, if that's a sign of the times, but how amazing would it be if we were so ready to engage in lending hope?
Yeah.
And I'm asking myself this question, you know, because I seem very positioned to get in a place of conflict when I see something I disagree with.
Right.
And that reminds me that I don't necessarily have all the answers. So when you were talking, I was thinking about something I heard recently where it was posited, what is the opposite of success? Is it failure? And my experience and the person who was talking, their experience was that the opposite of success is not failure. Failure is part of success.
Right.
And if you look at some of the people who've achieved great things, you know, in our modern history, they failed and failed and failed and failed. Yeah. And that's been the way they've kind of perfected their craft until they got it right. And I can't count how many businesses I've started. And when I look at the failures, I look at them as growth opportunities. And that gives me hope that, you know, if I fail at something today or tomorrow, that maybe that's part of the success that I'm going for. And as long as I'm still breathing, as long as I'm still breathing, for me, there's hope. And then you were talking about this thing where when we talk to other people, sometimes almost like hearing ourselves try to help them, we're inspired or we see the hope in our situation. And that's why for me, as a member of a sober network, I've got to work with mentors who have been where I've been and who can help me see how they got through hard times. I know being a father has been something that's been very difficult for me. And, you know, I don't have your I guess, typical or ideal nuclear family. And so working through that has been very challenging. And there have been times where, you know, I didn't know if I could take the pain that comes along with being separated from a child.
Yeah.
And today things look much brighter. I spend a lot of time with my daughter and things are going really well. But without working with some type of mentor, you know, minor of a spiritual nature, I don't know how I would have gotten through that. And then I was also told that if I want to keep this thing, the sobriety, this hope, this faith, I've got to give it away. And so the way I do that is I remain in a position where I'm holding out a helping hand to others. And whether it's in the form of this or being parts of certain groups where people regularly show up that are suffering and don't have any idea of how they're going to get out of their situation, you know, that's one way where, you know, I've got my one hand connected to someone who's further along, but I'm also reaching out to pull other people out of the darkness. And, and I'll wrap this part up with, there have been times where I'm giving someone advice and in the middle of giving them advice, I'm like, dude, you need to take your own advice. And that is a very humbling place to be. And that's a place where I grow, and I grow quick, because I can't sit here and tell you what I think you should do.
Right.
And then not do it myself. That's, seems hypocritical.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it seems like what you kind of described is we lease hope. Right? We never really own it. It's something that we should, you know, receive and give.
Right. We share it for sure.
We should share. Hope is something to share. Because, I mean, without that, like, so hope is comes from crisis, right? I mean, we know that unless you have been without, right, you're not going to have the desire to, you're not, that hope doesn't really come in. Right. I mean, if everything you have is, if you've had everything you've ever wanted, then there's no need for hope. Right. So hope comes from this lacking, this position of lacking. So it's actually the lacking. It's actually, like you said, the failure. It's actually those things that create the hope. It's the conflict. It's the uncomfortableness. It's the object of our desire is what creates the hope.
And when you talk about that, it reminds me that it might seem like some people have it all, but at the end of the day, we're all human and we all lose people we care about at some point if we're around long enough.
Right.
And I think that's one place where we can all connect and see that the playing field is leveled. We're all going to experience suffering and loss and pain, you know, I guess, unless you're, you know, a sociopath and human connection is not something that you need or desire. But I think the majority of us are going to be able to relate that we're going to lose somehow, some way, and figuring out how to get through that, especially for those of us with self-destructive behavior patterns in our past, that could be life-saving.
Yeah. So hope is something that we borrow. It's something that we lend. People out there are in a state of hopelessness, and that's a vicious cycle that we can get caught into. And to have the, one of the things I think that worked the best for me is a sense of community. This having a place of belonging, having someone to be able to call, and get that. And so that's one of the big things that what we do here. And, you know, we always put the phone number out there. We want you to call the number, we message us, direct message us, any of us, because I feel like hopelessness and loneliness kind of like hang out together.
Yeah.
Like they're homies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, because when you're, And sometimes it's hard. It's hard to connect to somebody when you're in this state of hopelessness, when you feel lonely, right? I think one of our first podcasts we talked about, like, that prolonged exposure to sense of loneliness can actually shorten your life.
Absolutely.
And for sure, hopelessness comes along with that, and they kind of like feed on each other. And so I think of the person who may be listening and watching this and going, you know, that there is no sense of connection. It's really hard. And I get that, because for me, a sense of belonging is huge. And it's really hard for me to get that. I can't get that unless the people that I'm connecting with, we're connecting on a really real deep level. Like, I'm not good at the small talk. Like, if I go to a party, everyone's like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. I don't know how to do that, you know, small talk. I'm not good. I'm like, okay, this is not working, you know? And that comes from this sense of you know, I'm desiring this connection. So it's really easy when you get into those situations that you can feel, okay, it's that I'm alone in a room full of people kind of sense.
Right.
You know? And I have people in my life that pull me out of that. They drag me along. They say, hey, you know, like there's a church retreat this weekend, and I'm not super stoked to go because I'm not sure. But I do know, I'm hopeful. I have hope that by just kind of pulling myself out of this comfort zone that I'm in and getting into this arena, that something good will come of it.
And maybe you can be of service.
That's the something good. Yeah. That I could be of service, that maybe there'll be someone in there who's going to have a same sense of hopelessness or loneliness. And even though, and a lot of leaders, a lot of people who are in great positions, they have that too. You know, I mean, they go home and they sit alone and they go, I mean, I used to work with there was this one celebrity that I worked with, and we were hanging out at his house, and we were like, all right, hey, we're going to go. And, you know, it was like he was almost like nervous about being alone, because he's always around people. He always had an assistant with him, or some employees with him, or friends with him, or someone. And we were like, well, we're leaving. It was like you could tell this, like, uh-oh. I mean, this person is highly successful, money, looks like is a great person, has a lot of hope in life. But they were actually scared to be alone. You know what I mean? So, like you said that everyone experiences this loneliness, this hopelessness in some way, but it's not everyone that acknowledges it, right?
And I suppose some people don't take it as far.
Right.
We have a tendency to take it to where, you know, for me, I'm locked in a bathroom somewhere.
Right.
Killing myself. And I have nobody to reach out to.
Yeah.
Because I've isolated myself to that point. And so that's why I work daily to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
Because now, you know, I've tasted what a good life feels like and looks like, and nothing's more precious.
Yeah. All right, it looks like we had a question.
Someone says,
do you think hopelessness stems from a lack of faith or a lack of hope? Yeah, I think so. I think that it kind of creates this, it creates this cycle that when you're, once you experience that, this is the thing, right? They tell you to feel your feelings, okay? Feeling hopeless, feeling like this is not working, feeling discontent is not a bad thing. It's okay to feel that way. I think that's part of the problem, is that as soon as we feel a sense of hopelessness, as soon as we feel a sense of discomfort, we want to change that. And I think that it's out of the hopelessness, it's out of that lack of faith, that's what breeds and creates more hope. I don't know if that, I think that helps.
Yeah, well, what I think of is when we feel that way, because we're going to, as humans, feel things that are unpleasant. If we've gotten to the point where we have tools, hopefully we'll choose to do something healthy and reach out when we're lonely or hopeless, rather than continuing to self-destruct, continuing to pollute, so to speak, the environment around us, which creates a, you know, vicious perpetuating cycle of hopelessness and loneliness, because nobody really wants to be around that. And so once we're approached or given a set of tools, like, hey, you can go to this place where other people share, and you can go to this place where people work on spirituality, or you can call these people and get a little bit of hope and figure out what to do next, or sometimes just what not to do next, that also can be life-saving and life-changing. And and that's why I try to stay connected, because the connection, without that, I wouldn't be where I'm at. And I don't think I could do this alone.
Yeah.
I know I couldn't.
I think that's why dogs are man's best friend. Because a dog never, like, not hope. Like, a dog is, like, just a four-legged embodiment of hope.
Man, I love dogs.
Right? I mean, it's a, you know, you come into a room, there's this dog wagging his tail. And it's just, like, there's no, like, sense of, like, ugh.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Also, I think, like, nature is a really good source of inspiration for hope. Right? Because, I mean, the sun's going to come up. We know how these things work. You know, we know that the sun's going to go down, and then the darkness will come, and then we, you know, you can take a walk and get out and into, I know that sounds like very hippie-ish, but I mean, I think it's true. I mean, I think that there's like, you know, connecting with things that are very real and grounded and rooted. Like, that tree is there. It's there, and it's been there for a long time, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure research indicates that the more we get out in nature, the more light we get.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking a walk, typically there's going to be a little more light out there than inside your home. The more exercise we get, that improves your mental health, your endorphins are raised, you know, the neurotransmitters that help you feel better increase. And so isolation is the opposite of that. And it's a scary place to be, and which is why, you know, I love to talk to people about what that was like and what happened and what it's like now and how I got here.
Right.
And I'm certainly not perfect at this path and struggle on a daily basis, but it gets better.
Yeah. There's one thing I want to address is that when it comes to the topic of faith and hope, is that there's a negative side to trying to believe your way out of something. I don't know if I'm going to be able to articulate it, but it's the idea of, like, believing in belief, right? And it's a tendency that we have, right? So it's like, if you believe what I believe, then it's easier for us to kind of connect because we're believing in belief. And I feel like hope is beyond that, right?
Right.
Hope is like, I don't know. I'm not describing it very well. But I feel like when you're in this sense of hopelessness and you're trying to just believe your way out of it, sometimes it don't work. And so, you know, because sometimes you're a person who's gone to church, and maybe the church isn't working like it did. Maybe your faith is not working like it did. Maybe the things that you believed aren't, you don't know if you believe them anymore.
I've heard faith without works is dead. And I think what that means is I can lay in my bed all day and have faith that something greater than myself will pull me out of this.
Right.
But I got to do the footwork. I got to get out there. I got to use the tools that I was given. And I got to do my part.
Yeah.
You know, someone told me one time, if you want God to move mountains, bring a shovel. And right. This is hard work.
Right.
And this is something that I think dedication makes possible. And so one of the things that I was thinking when you were talking was that, you know, if what you're saying is accurate about believing in belief, sometimes that might not be helpful for some people.
Yeah.
But I do know if you don't believe in anything,
right,
and you're hopeless, sometimes if you just believe that I believe,
right,
and that I also was in a place where I didn't have any options, then maybe that's enough to get you motivated to take some steps, to do some things that will help you save yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the points when I felt the most hopeless, you know, was when the drugs stopped working, right? When it was like, you know, I would do a line and then lay down, catch a drain, and I'd fall asleep, because it's like my body was just not having it anymore. And once the drugs stopped working, it was like, okay, what now? You know what I mean? Hey, we're getting a call. Hey, caller, you're on the phone.
Excuse us.
Yeah. Well, I get distracted easily.
Hey, hopefully that wasn't a valuable client.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, when the drugs stopped working, when the things that, you know, I was turning to stopped working, that it was like, okay, now what? You know?
That's a crazy concept that I wasn't familiar with until it happened to me, that the drugs stopped working. And yeah, when I started working on getting better and interacting and in and around groups of people who were working on a solution, they told me, you know, if you think that, you know, you need to drink, go try to drink. See how that works out for you. Because if it works for you, then maybe you're not ready. Mm-hmm. But for me, there was no question. It had already stopped working. And once you feel that pain,
right,
there's nothing like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the danger with that advice is if you do drink, then it's like, okay, hey, this does work. And then you're...
And maybe you're not ready.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's true. All right. Well, I think...
we've got it.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't have anything else to add. I hope this helped somebody.
I have faith that we can at least help one person.
Nice, I like that. That was good. It was like a little play on puns.
Mm-hmm.
Pun on play. So, yeah. That's it.
What's the phone number?
I don't know it. And my phones and stuff are all... Well, here, let's pull it up.
I bet it's on the website. What's the website? TheMostHighShow.com. We've also got... Christian's put up some stuff on Facebook and Instagram, so
yeah,
not hard to find.
No, and the number is 657-464-7159. 657-464-7159.
Direct message works too, right?
And direct message works. And yeah, I know it's hard, but reach out. I mean, you can send a text to that number too. And yeah.
You can do it anonymously, right?
You can do it anonymously.
Yeah, we respect anonymity.
Yeah.
Got you.
Yeah.